Sarah Kay's memoir opens a door into a world many fantasize about but few openly discuss. The exploration of BDSM, bondage, discipline, dominance, submission, sadism, and masochism remains one of society's last true taboos despite its growing presence in popular culture. From 50 Shades of Grey becoming a global phenomenon to celebrities like Rihanna and Angelina Jolie openly discussing their interest in kink, BDSM has edged closer to mainstream acceptance. Yet most practitioners keep their preferences private, creating a fascinating dichotomy between public curiosity and personal secrecy. This tension between hidden desires and lived experiences forms the backbone of Sarah's journey, a story that resonates with anyone who has ever wondered if their deepest fantasies might someday become reality. For years, Sarah's fantasies followed a familiar pattern: a handsome, broad-shouldered Prince Charming who dominated her completely, knowing exactly what she wanted without asking. In her imagination, she would be spanked while wearing high heels, carried to a four-poster bed, tied down, blindfolded, and pleasured before passionate lovemaking. The scenarios played out like carefully choreographed dances: silk scarves, candlelight, and perfectly timed commands. Sometimes her fantasy dom would order her to crawl, to beg, to serve him in ways that made her blush even in private. These fantasies remained locked away, deemed too strange to share, until conversations with friends revealed her desires might be more common than she thought. Over wine one evening, her friend Jessica confessed similar dreams, and gradually, Sarah discovered several women in her circle harbored comparable secrets. Her marriage to Ray offered no outlet for these fantasies. He was proudly old-fashioned in all the wrong ways, refusing housework and childcare while she worked constantly to support them. When Sarah once playfully suggested handcuffs, Ray had laughed it off as weird porn stuff. He expected traditional gender roles in daily life, but showed no interest in power exchange in the bedroom. The relationship's eventual collapse left Sarah channeling her desires into writing erotic novels, researching BDSM, and discovering her submissive nature through fiction rather than experience. Her stories became increasingly detailed, incorporating elements she'd learned from online BDSM communities: safe words, aftercare, consent negotiations. Post-divorce dating proved equally frustrating. Sarah kept attracting practical men like Ray, and when she tentatively broached the subject of spanking with one date, Henry, his horrified reaction confirmed her fears that nice men would find her desires perverted. "That's abuse," he declared, pushing away from the restaurant table. This crystallized her understanding. She needed someone specifically interested in dominance, someone trustworthy, patient, and experienced who could guide her through exploring her untested fantasies. She began recognizing that true dominance wasn't about aggression or cruelty, but about control, trust, and mutual satisfaction. The gap between fantasy and reality became apparent when Sarah finally gathered the courage to post a profile on a BDSM website. Describing herself as a 40-something female novice submissive with lots of imagination but no real-time experience, she was simultaneously terrified of attracting dangerous people and receiving no responses at all. The 40 replies she received revealed that BDSM enthusiasts were just normal people seeking connection, albeit with unconventional sexual tastes. They were lawyers, teachers, accountants, ordinary people who happened to share her interests. Many described their own journeys from fantasy to reality, offering advice and friendship rather than immediate sexual proposals. This realization marked Sarah's first step toward bridging the divide between her imagined submission and its real-world practice, a journey that would prove far more complex, nuanced, and emotionally demanding than her fantasies had prepared her for. She learned that real BDSM relationships required extensive communication, boundary setting, and trust-building exercises that never appeared in her fantasies. The path to fulfillment would demand vulnerability, courage, and patience she hadn't anticipated, but the possibility of authentic connection made it worth exploring. Among the responses to Sarah's online profile, Max's stood out immediately. Unlike others who emphasized physical pain or immediate gratification, his thoughtful, articulate email focused on the mental aspects of domination, Their subsequent phone conversations revealed a man with varied interests: cooking, theater, travel, literature, who happened to be a dom, not a one-dimensional character from her fantasies. After weeks of lengthy discussions, Max suggested meeting, but warned that BDSM was serious business, requiring a formal contract outlining boundaries and safe words. When he mentioned expecting total and complete obedience during play, Sarah hesitated, considering the implications of surrendering control so completely. Despite her reservations, she quickly arranged a meeting at Norwich Cathedral before she could lose her nerve. Max immediately shifted the power dynamic with a follow-up email instructing Sarah to call him Sir and specifying exactly what to wear: white blouse, dark skirt, white underwear, and black stockings. He even requested her measurements for a collar and cuffs. This immediate assertion of control both unsettled and excited Sarah, giving her a taste of the authority exchange that would define their relationship. Their first meeting cemented their chemistry. Though Max arrived late, apologizing with an umbrella in the rain, his commanding presence was unmistakable. At a cafe, he ordered for Sarah, without asking, tea and lemon drizzle cake, her favorite, having observed what she'd looked at on display. This small act of dominance, making decisions on her behalf while paying careful attention to her preferences, exemplified the nuanced power dynamic they would develop. When Max handed Sarah an envelope containing her punishment for wearing stockings with suspenders instead of holdups as instructed, the reality of their arrangement became concrete. The afternoon ended with a chaste kiss on the cheek and Max telling her to call when she was ready. Sarah called immediately as he walked away, signaling her eagerness to continue this journey despite, or perhaps because of, its unfamiliarity. This beginning established the foundation of their relationship: Max as the experienced guide, Sarah as the willing but nervous novice, both navigating the complex territory between fantasy and reality, between dominance and submission, between play and genuine connection. A week after their first meeting, Sarah found herself blindfolded with a silky mask in her own sitting room, responding to Max with "yes, sir" or "no, sir," part of the contract they'd signed. Though she initially felt ridiculous using such formal address, she complied with this first step into her new role as a submissive. The contract Max had sent wasn't surprising in content. Sarah had written similar ones in her fiction, but this time it applied to her real life, not a fictional character. It outlined her obligations to obey, address him as Sir, and participate in various activities while establishing provisions for safe words, honest communication, and safety protocols. Despite initially feeling the contract was complete nonsense, Sarah came to understand its importance as Max insisted they couldn't proceed without it. The document included hard limits: no breath play, animals, electrical play, scat, suspension, needles, or blades. Sarah added her own boundaries: no photographs or videos that could identify her. Their first scene together demonstrated how the contract's theoretical framework translated to physical reality. Blindfolded in her sitting room, Sarah stood trembling as Max circled her. When she protested his use of handcuffs, having stipulated against being tied up, Max pointed out she'd only ruled out ropes specifically. Though annoyed at being outwitted by semantics, she found herself trusting him completely. The spanking that followed hurt far more than Sarah had imagined in her fantasies, yet the pain amplified the pleasure in unexpected ways. As Max massaged her stinging flesh and explored between her legs, Sarah approached orgasm, begging, "Please, sir." Max suddenly stopped, explaining that things happen according to my timetable, not yours, another assertion of the control dynamic they'd established. This first experience revealed something crucial Sarah hadn't anticipated. She couldn't possibly separate these intense physical experiences from emotional connection as she'd naively planned. This wasn't something she could compartmentalize alongside a conventional relationship. It demanded complete emotional investment alongside the physical submission. The contract, then, served not just as a list of do's and don'ts, but as a framework for the emotional and psychological journey they were beginning together, a journey that would challenge Sarah's preconceptions about relationships, pleasure, and her own desires. Sarah's introduction to the flogger revealed the complex relationship between pain and pleasure central to BDSM. What began as soft suede strips feeling like silk against her skin transformed into hot, stinging sensations that took her breath away. Following Max's instructions to count each stroke, she became increasingly lost in the experience as the flogger landed repeatedly. "Let go, I'm here," Max encouraged as she gasped through each count. By the 10th stroke, Sarah's knees buckled, and Max caught her, praising her as good girl. This moment illustrated a fundamental aspect of the dom-sub dynamic, the submissive's vulnerability creating space for the dominant's protection and praise. The pain seamlessly transitioned to pleasure as Max's lips found her neck and shoulders, his fingers teasing her breasts. This duality extended beyond individual sessions into their entire relationship. After Max left following an intense scene, Sarah sat in her garden feeling shivery despite the sunshine. His parting words had been reassuring, promising to call later and encouraging her to eat something. When he left, she cried, not from regret, but from the emotional impact of finally experiencing what she'd fantasized about for so long. Sarah realized that real-life BDSM wasn't seamless or painless, but a journey rather than a destination. The physical sensations, both painful and pleasurable, were inextricably linked with emotional responses, creating experiences more complex and fulfilling than her fantasies had suggested. One particularly powerful aspect of their dynamic was the secret shared between them. Beneath the surface appearance, something else was always happening. This became evident when Max suggested they go out together to a fashionable restaurant on the Norfolk coast. He emailed Sarah explicit instructions about what to wear, and she arrived wearing only a Burberry trench coat, pearl earrings, high heels, and holdups, completely naked underneath. When the waiter offered to take her coat, Sarah panicked, but Max handed her a gift bag and suggested she freshen up. In the ladies' room, she found a sequined dress and pashmina. Though her nipples remained visible through the thin fabric, she returned to the table exhilarated by this daring experience, another example of how trust, risk, and reward intertwined in their relationship. The culmination of this duality came during their woodland encounter, where Max suspended Sarah from a tree branch in a secluded clearing. Despite being naked, gagged, blindfolded, and suspended in the woods, she felt intensely alive. When the first stroke of the crop exploded across her back, she shrieked against the gag. Through 12 agonizing strokes, she sobbed and begged him to stop, yet never gave the signal that would end it. Afterward, Max held her tenderly against his chest as she recovered, the comfort after pain, the tenderness after intensity, creating a complete emotional and physical experience that transcended either sensation alone. This pattern of intensity, followed by care, became the rhythm of their relationship, each extreme enhancing the other. Sarah's relationship with Max gradually introduced her to the broader BDSM community and lifestyle aspects she hadn't considered when first exploring her fantasies. This became apparent when Max invited her to dinner at Georgina's house, a 6'4 transgender woman with impeccable style who moved in a great cloud of Chanel No. 5. Before the dinner, Max presented Sarah with a silver collar with a padlock engraved with "The Property of Max," which she accepted as a symbol of their dom-sub relationship. This physical token represented her entry into a world where BDSM wasn't just about private encounters, but a lifestyle with its own social codes and community. At the party, Sarah met Georgina's circle of BDSM friends, including Anita, a predatory redhead who asked Max about sharing Sarah, making her uncomfortable. This introduced Sarah to the concept of polyamory within BDSM circles, something she hadn't anticipated. The dinner itself revealed further aspects of the lifestyle. Submissives sat on cushions on the floor, some had dog bowls, while others, like Sarah, were hand-fed by their doms, an experience meant to be erotic but mostly left her hungry and impatient. After dinner, Georgina showed them to the exquisite green room where their bags had been placed. Despite its luxury, plush bedding, silk cushions, and tasteful decor, the room's true purpose was revealed by the metal rings embedded in the furniture and walls, plus numerous mirrors. Max explained that if they stayed, Sarah would be sleeping on a narrow mattress on the floor, chained to the bed frame while he enjoyed the comfortable bed. Masters and subs don't sleep together. We use you and then kick you out of bed. The evening continued in Georgina's playroom, actually a dungeon, where Barry demonstrated suspension bondage. The space had its own separate entrance and bedroom in the roof space, with Georgina explaining they rented it to friends as a pension plan. Inside were safety supplies, condoms, lube, gloves, sanitizer, and various equipment resembling gym machines until you noticed the cuffs and chains. This glimpse into the BDSM community showed Sarah that what she'd considered a private sexual preference was, for many, an integrated lifestyle with its own social structures, etiquette, and community support. Some aspects appealed to her, while others, like the idea of being shared or sleeping on the floor, challenged her boundaries and expectations. The lifestyle extended to everyday interactions as well. Max's habit of sending suggestive texts and emails throughout Sarah's days ensured he was never far from her thoughts, creating a constant undercurrent of their power dynamic even when physically apart. This sweet torture wasn't helping her work schedule, but was doing wonders for her fantasy life and even her weight loss. Through these experiences, Sarah began to understand that BDSM wasn't compartmentalized to specific scenes or encounters, but could permeate all aspects of a relationship, from social gatherings to sleeping arrangements to daily communications, creating a comprehensive lifestyle rather than just a sexual preference. Despite the physical intensity and power dynamics of their relationship, genuine emotional connection developed between Sarah and Max. This became evident during their hotel encounter when, after an intense session where Sarah was blindfolded and Max explored her body with oil, clamps, and various sensations, he shocked her with a real, proper boyfriend-girlfriend kiss that made her heart flutter. Even more surprising was his confession, "I'm falling in love with you." When Sarah questioned whether real love could exist alongside their BDSM relationship, Max insisted his feelings weren't diminished by being a dom. This moment challenged Sarah's assumption that BDSM relationships were primarily physical or role-based, revealing the potential for deep emotional connection within power exchange dynamics. Their trip to Paris further developed this emotional dimension. Max sent a car to collect Sarah at the airport, booked a luxurious suite in a former Duke's residence, and arranged for her to spend the afternoon being pampered at a spa. He presented her with gifts, an elegant black and white dress, red shoes, and a matching handbag for dinner. Their Paris days followed a pattern, sightseeing for Sarah while Max worked, then nights where he'd bind, beat, and use her completely. She slept on a mattress beside his bed, rising early to prepare for breakfast on the terrace. The unwavering rules felt oddly comforting, structure providing security within their unconventional relationship. At Versailles, they discussed the dynamics of their relationship more explicitly. Sarah explained that while she treasured her independence, temporarily surrendering control to him felt liberating. She didn't order meals, pay bills, or make decisions when with him. Max taught her it was about trust and letting go, revealing the psychological depth beneath their physical interactions. However, this emotional vulnerability created new risks. On their final evening in Paris, they encountered Abby, Max's ex and mother of his daughter Ellie, sitting in the hotel lobby. The little girl ran to Max calling Daddy, while Abby explained she'd come because Max wouldn't take her calls. Abby confronted Sarah, claiming Max still loved her and that they were living together again. This intrusion of reality, Max's past relationship, his child, his ongoing responsibilities, complicated their emotional connection. When Max returned to their room near midnight after settling Abby and Ellie in a nearby hotel, he explained Abby wasn't well and needed help. When Sarah asked what he wanted, he admitted that while he wanted her, there's Ellie to think about, and at the moment, they both need me. The next morning, Sarah packed early, telling Max she was falling in love with him, but could see he wasn't over Abby. She returned the necklace key and left, knowing that if they were meant to be, he would sort out his life first. She cried all the way to the airport, part of her hoping he'd come after her, part knowing he was probably with Abby and Ellie. This painful conclusion demonstrated that BDSM relationships face the same emotional challenges as conventional ones, competing attachments, past commitments, and the complexity of balancing different loves and responsibilities. The power dynamics of dominance and submission couldn't shield either of them from the very human pain of conflicting emotional needs. After returning home from Paris, Sarah found a message from Max simply saying, "Call me." She replayed it several times, analyzing every nuance of those two words before deleting it and calling her friend Gabby instead. Following a night of talking and tequila, Sarah retreated to Gabby's coastal cottage with her work, dog, and walking boots. Before leaving, she emailed Max explaining that she couldn't be with someone not completely free to love her back. During her two-week retreat of work, beach walks, and heartache, she lost weight and gained clarity. When she returned home, Max had replied that while he loved her, Abby and Ellie needed him now. Sarah put his necklace away in her desk drawer, a symbolic closure to that chapter of her life. Months later, Sarah received a call from Alex, who had responded to her BDSM ad before she met Max. Though initially hesitant, she agreed to meet him for lunch, realizing she couldn't find any relationship while hiding away. This step represented her continued commitment to exploring her submissive side despite the heartbreak with Max. In the epilogue, Sarah reflects that her book chronicles personal BDSM experiences, not a how-to manual. She took risks by choice, never coerced or bullied. To protect those involved, she changed names, appearances, ages, and blurred details while preserving essences. What she experienced was consensual and safe, prioritizing everyone's well-being, unlike some normal relationships she'd had. Meeting Max proved invaluable. He expertly guided her through BDSM basics safely and consensually. After they broke up, Sarah realized she wanted someone who could enjoy both BDSM and vanilla intimacy. She found him, married him, and now lives what passes for ordinary in her world. Sometimes she's tied to the bed. Other times, they simply read together, snuggled up. This final reflection reveals Sarah's ultimate discovery. BDSM doesn't have to be all-encompassing or exclusive. It can be one exciting aspect of a rich, multifaceted relationship, a part of life rather than its totality. Her journey from fantasy to experience to integration represents a mature understanding of how alternative sexuality can enhance rather than define a relationship. Sarah's story ultimately demonstrates that BDSM, like any sexual preference, works best when incorporated into a balanced life, one that includes emotional connection, mutual respect, and the flexibility to move between different modes of interaction. Her final, happy acceptance of part of my nature emphasizes that submission isn't her entire identity, but one authentic expression of it, to be enjoyed alongside many others in a complete and fulfilling life. Unlike the sanitized or glamorized portrayals of BDSM in popular media, Sarah's experiences reveal the complex reality of power exchange relationships. Her journey illustrates that BDSM isn't about damaged people seeking pain or control, but about trust, communication, and mutual fulfillment through clearly defined roles. The contract Sarah and Max established wasn't just a sexy prop, but a serious negotiation of boundaries and expectations. Their safe words weren't dramatic devices, but essential tools, ensuring both parties remained comfortable throughout intense experiences. The aftercare Max provided following scenes wasn't an optional extra, but a crucial component of the emotional and physical safety that made their encounters possible. Sarah's story demonstrates that submission isn't weakness, but a conscious choice requiring tremendous strength and self-awareness. Similarly, Max's dominance wasn't about bullying or control for its own sake, but about creating a safe space for Sarah to explore her desires while respecting her boundaries. This mutual respect and communication stand in stark contrast to unhealthy relationships Sarah experienced previously, like her marriage to Ray. Perhaps most importantly, Sarah's journey shows that BDSM exists on a spectrum rather than as an all-or-nothing lifestyle. Her ultimate happiness came not from total immersion in submission, but from finding a partner who could enjoy both BDSM and vanilla intimacy, moving fluidly between dominance-submission and equal partnership depending on the context and their mutual desires. This balanced approach to power exchange relationships offers a more nuanced and realistic alternative to the often problematic portrayals in mainstream media. Sarah's story suggests that BDSM, practiced with consent, communication, and care, can be a healthy expression of sexuality and a path to self-discovery, rather than a sign of psychological damage or moral failing. By sharing her journey from fantasy to reality and finally to integration, Sarah provides a roadmap for others curious about BDSM, not as a prescription for what they should do, but as an honest account of one woman's exploration of her authentic desires. The secret life she discovered wasn't about hiding shameful urges, but about embracing a part of herself that society had taught her to suppress, a journey toward wholeness rather than fragmentation.